radio show where country music gets up close and personal.
Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Ontario singer-songwriter Zach Rickson is getting set to release his first EP. He'll be performing at the Black Swan Pub in Toronto next week as part of the annual Tin Pan North Songwriters Festival. We'll talk about all this and more, plus I've got a couple of songs from Zach's EP to play. My pleasure now to welcome Zach Rickson. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Dave. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing very well. Thank you very much for having me on the show tonight. It's always a pleasure to talk with you guys.
Great pleasure to speak with you, and I've had you on in the past and as part of the Tin Pan North event, and now we're going to focus on you for the show, and lots to talk about, lots of things going on, a couple of songs to share from the EP, but first of all, let's talk about how it feels to have your EP done and ready for people to hear.
I can't believe it. You know, it's one of those things that I've been threatening to do for a long time. You know, I had a couple false starts a few years back in terms of trying to put projects together, and really it was meeting my producer Kenny Royster that really made me finally do it. You know, last time I was on your show, we played a song that I had co-written with a good friend of mine, an artist named Shane Martin, and Kenny produced that. So it was really getting to know him through the process and seeing how he worked. And really building up a trust with him, because it's really something very important that you have to have with a producer. You know, you have to be able to make a ton of mistakes in front of them. You have to have faith in their ability to bring the best out of you, and you have to have faith in their faith in your project. So roundabout, I would say, you know, 16, 17 months ago perhaps, I decided, okay, I'm finally going to do this. So I finally did it. And I was hoping to put it out this Thursday. It was going to be my CD release as part of Tin Pan North. And then I discovered a little glitch in some technical stuff on it. So I've got to delay it a bit, but I do have most of it completed, and I'll organize some type of event to put the CD out when it's finally completed and I'm holding it in my hands. So.
Well, that is awesome. And let's talk about the songwriting process and choosing the songs for the album. First of all, Zach, did you write all the songs or co-write all the ones that will be on the EP?
I did. I wrote or co-wrote. There's six songs on the disc, and I did write or co-write each of them. And sometimes I wrote just the lyrics. Sometimes I wrote both the music and the lyrics. Sometimes, you know, the songs were existing ideas I had and brought to somebody to complete. Sometimes it was the other way around. So it was a wide variety of situations and a wide variety of material. The big thing for me is I wanted to put songs together that, you know, really that worked well together. You know, the order of the songs on the EP is very important. You know, it kind of takes you through this entire arc of a relationship, you know. And so I wanted to do something, you know, unique from that perspective, but I also wanted to do songs that were a little different from me stylistically than people might expect to hear from me, and also songs that I enjoyed performing and that I knew that I would have fun putting together in the studio. There's a couple of songs that have really almost a 60s British R&B meets country vibe to them that I really enjoyed recording those. And, you know, a lot of it came down to, you know, wanting to make sure that I was putting out something that hadn't been recorded by somebody else. You know, I've had a few songs recorded by some folks, and wanted to do something that, you know, people were going to listen to and hopefully they'd enjoy it.
Was it tough narrowing it down to the six that are on there? I'm sure, obviously, you've got a bunch of others written, and I'm sure a lot of the other ones came close.
A lot of them did, and it really was difficult, you know, because you've got to look at, okay, what are you going to be able to pull off, you know? Because sometimes, you know, I'll write something that's got this huge soaring chorus, and I'm really not that kind of vocalist. And it was actually going to be a much longer CD. I decided to make it an EP after I started a band, And a couple of the songs, actually probably three or four of them, that I was going to record for my CD, for my album, I ended up bringing into the context of the band. So if nobody ends up liking this CD, you can count yourself fortunate that it was going to be twice as long as it actually is.
That is too funny. Now, another funny thing about it there is the title you've come up with for your CD. Do you care to share that on the show?
Sure. I called it I Spent All My Money on the Music. And when you see the actual finished copy, you realize that the front of it is completely black with just old rickety typewriter writing on it. There's no pictures on it. There's no pictures anywhere in the project. It's simply in a simple cardboard sleeve because, quite frankly, I did spend all my money on the music. And by the time it came to do the packaging, I had no budget left. And, you know, I hate getting my picture taken. So it's very, very simple. And I've been working with this graphic designer from the States, the guy that does all the Shane's records. And, you know, he'd send me ideas, and I'd think to myself, oh, that looks cheap. Oh, that looks chintzy or whatever, right? And I thought, well, maybe we just need to acknowledge my cheapness head on this. So I sent him back an idea and said, can you find some font that looks like an old busted-up typewriter? And just write on there, I spent all my money on the music, and let's see what it looks like. And he shot it back to me, and it looked great. And I thought, okay, might as well confront my cheapness head on. You know, it costs a lot of money to put these records together. And
yeah.
And I spent just, you know, an insane amount of time in the studio doing vocals and stuff. And I wanted this to sound like a project, you know, from a production standpoint and from a songwriting standpoint that could compete with stuff that's out there, you know. And by
right.
the time, frankly, it came to do the packaging, well, didn't have any money left. So I thought, let's just call a spade here and acknowledge the truth and just call it I spent all my money on the music, because I did.
That's kind of funny. I love the story behind that, and it's memorable, which is cool for titles, right, for an album. It's something that people will remember, and they'll remember the story behind it.
Yeah, for sure. So let's hope that they do remember it.
Now, I like how you said there's an arc in here, that there's actually, I guess, a theme from the first track to the last one, and we're following a story or a relationship.
Absolutely, yeah. There is an arc, and there's a sixth song that got added really at the 11th hour that fortunately fits that arc. But basically, you know, it travels through this relationship from the high points to the absolute dejection to the rebirth, right? In finding something else. And, you know, there's been inspiration for that obviously in my own life and inspiration in other people's lives that I've seen, and so that was my goal, you know. So when you're picking the order that the songs go in the CD, and the ones we're gonna listen to tonight are actually the first and the last. I saved the depressing, dejecting ones. I figured we wouldn't put those on the air tonight. But, you know, you've got this whole arc of a relationship. And, you know, the bottom line is that I was trying to do something that, you know, not only I enjoyed listening to, but let's face it, right? We're writers, we're artists. We want to put stuff out there that people will enjoy. And my goal was to put out something that I thought that people could identify with, so.
Now, when you're performing at different venues, Zach, the Moonshine Cafe, I saw you there several months ago. What is it like for you when you're performing a song for the first time, and it's a song that you believe in, and that's why you're sharing it, obviously, and then you're getting that response from the crowd?
Well, it depends on what the response is.
Good point.
I've played to a lot of empty rooms, you know. when you're playing to an empty room, you know, it reminds me of a John Fogerty story. He was talking about playing Woodstock, and he said, you know, by the time that CCR got up to play at Woodstock, everybody was either drunk, stoned, asleep, or dead, except for this one guy, like 300 feet back, standing on his buddies going, "Woo, you rock, John, you rock." And Fogerty always said, I played Woodstock for that guy. Well, I need one person. That's all I need is one person, right? So sometimes I'll play for a room that's got three people into it, and if one person is actually listening, then I'll just play for that person. But it's awesome when you get up there and you perform something that you really believe in, and you see it resonating with somebody, or you're playing at a really, really noisy place. This is my most favorite moments in my career, right, is when I'm playing at a really, really noisy place and I get up and I play something and the whole place just stops. I love that. And
right.
I know so many writers that have had that experience, and that's awesome. And, you know, one time years ago I was playing in, where was it? Niagara Falls, I think. And I'm playing this song. And, you know, I'd never had a song on the radio. I didn't have a publishing deal yet. I didn't have any cuts or anything. So I'm looking out into the crowd, and this woman is singing along to my song. And I thought, and I had never seen her before, and I thought, okay, the only way that this woman could be singing along to my song is that she's come to 4 or 5 shows
right.
just to hear my music. So, it, you know, as much as we write from our own experience, it's not a cliche when we talk about, you know, I don't get up there and perform for me. I get up and perform for other people. And if there's one person in the room that digs it, then it just totally makes your night. If there isn't anybody, then you want to. If there isn't anybody, then you want to go out in the parking lot and run a hose from your exhaust. But most of the time, you've got somebody that likes what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
All it takes is one.
You just need that one. You're right to see it resonate in them and to know that it's had an impact. And of course, you build from there. But let's turn to the EP now. And the first song, which you mentioned, is the first track called "Falling for You."
That's right. I wrote this.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, sure. I wrote this with a friend of mine from the United Kingdom. His name is Michael Hill. And, you know, if you look at the power of the internet, I've never been in the same room as Mike, ever.
Right, right.
And we met through a Facebook forum. It's funny, he was having a really bad day. And people were jumping on him about some stuff in a Facebook forum. And, you know, he was questioning, you know, the validity of the songwriting model as it currently exists. And I thought, well, I'll check this guy out. So I went on his website, I guess his Reverb Nation page, and I listened to some of his tracks. And there was this one, he had this melody idea. And I thought, hey, that's really cool. And so I contacted him and said, hey, would you be open to working on this? And he was, and so we traded emails, you know, back and forth for a while and came up with something that we both liked, and that became Fallen for You. And I'll never forget, I recorded that vocal in June, and, you know, being a rabid perfectionist, there's been some things that I've wanted to fix on it, but I haven't been able to because my voice had some kind of vibe that day that I cut it that I've never been able to replicate. And I'll always remember how insanely hot it was that day in Nashville. I was in the studio 13 hours that day, and I came out at 9 o'clock at night, and the thermometer in the car said 104 degrees. Like, it was so hot. So when people listen to this, I hope they get the vibe of you know, like this really small club, you know, and a guy in like a fedora on a P bass or something thumping the bass in this smoky club, and I've got one of those big old, you know, Shure microphones that you got to hold in your entire hand. You know, that was really the vibe that we were going for. And I had Delbert McClinton's keyboard player come in the next day and put a real Hammond B3 and a real Wurlitzer on it, and I think he just absolutely smoked it. And the guitar player. You know, if people aren't familiar with how stuff's done in Nashville, these guys, the musicianship of these guys is just insane. So when you hear the guitar solo on this song, that's one take. Like the guy.
Wow, that's amazing.
And people say, hey, they know I play electric. Yeah, one take. They know I play electric guitar, and they say, hey, is that you? And I'm going, no, it's not. I can't play like that. And this guy, he pulled this solo off the top of his head, and it was just absolutely ridiculous. And he was so down to earth, and I said, what do I owe you? And he goes, $25.
Wow, that's incredible. I've heard stories like that where they learn the song very quickly, and as you said, in one take, coming up with a guitar solo obviously blew you away.
Oh, it was nuts. Absolutely nuts. It was just an awesome experience.
So recording in Nashville, before we get to the song, let's just talk about that. That's got to be a cool experience.
It really is. And, you know, it's a combination of being inspiring and intimidating and pressure-filled and uplifting all at the same time. I haven't been around long enough to be, you know, totally jaded about Nashville. I think Nashville's awesome. I love going there. I think that it really, you know, really makes me step up my game when I go there. But, you know, to have access to incredible musicians, and I mean people that, you know, that you've probably never heard of. And it's funny because everybody plays, everybody sings. I think that's a line from a Jason Aldean song. But, you know, the guy who brings you your waffles at the IHOP is one of the best guitar players you've ever heard. You know, the
right.
amount of talent down there. So to be able to, you know, to be able to record in a studio down there and produce something, I think it just creates a certain kind of vibe that, from a country music standpoint, that you just can't replicate anywhere else.
Yeah. Let's share the song now. This is brand new music from his upcoming EP. It's Zach Rickson and Fallen For You on In the Country. Brand new music from Zach Rickson here on In the Country. That is called Fallen For You. You can head to his website, zachrickson.com. Got another song from the EP coming up a bit later. And reading your bio again at your website, Zach, I was again struck with the fact that you talk about Kenny Rogers and Restless Heart, and those are two of my favorite artists.
Yeah, I'm Restless Heart is almost single-handedly responsible for my love of country music.
Wow.
I grew up in the 80s. I was a rocker kid, you know, loving Bon Jovi and all that stuff. You know, my brother had all the Quiet Riot records and Def Leppard and all that. And then I came home from school one day, and it was probably 1990 or 1991, and we had just gotten CMT. And I caught this video called The Bluest Eyes in Texas by Restless Heart.
Right.
And it just blew me away. I wasn't playing the guitar yet, and it just blew me away. So I started watching that channel all the time, trying to see that song again. And it just, you know, this is way before the internet and video on demand, YouTube and all that stuff, right? So it just totally sucked me in, and I just became, you know, completely addicted to that country sound, and really discovered it that way. And then Kenny Rogers, I mean, my parents had, I don't know what album it would have been, but, you know, The Gambler and Lucille and all that, you know,
right.
I grew up listening to that stuff. I knew all the words to that when I was like 5 years old.
That's awesome. Yeah, I discovered Kenny Rogers back in the day. And as you say, Lucille, The Gambler, Don't Fall in Love with the Dreamer, one of his many duets. So many classic songs, and it's good to see him still going strong today. I saw him at Casinorama last year or the year before, and he still sounds great.
Oh, cool. I've never had a chance to see him. I had a song on hold for him last year, which would have been awesome. Actually, it's a song that I ended up doing on the EP. It's called Close the Door. But the record label gods didn't work out with that one. But you know, to say that I had a song on hold for Kenny Rogers, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's a pretty big honor. That's awesome. Now, this Thursday is Tin Pan North, the start of it. It runs throughout the weekend. You're part of it on Thursday, which is May 23rd, at the Black Swan Pub in Toronto. Talk about that, and you're part of a songwriting round.
I am, and we decided to do something a little different this year on the NSAI side of things, and I of course need to put in a great word for the folks at NSAI and everything that they've done for me. And frankly, if you're listening out there and you write songs and you're not a member of NSAI, I think frankly it should be the next thing that you do to advance your career. So what we're doing on Thursday night, there's always four writers in the round, and we had a headliner scheduled. And then that headliner had a conflict, and she's now playing on the Friday night, I believe. Her name is Kate Todd. She's awesome. You got to check her out.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
But we needed a headliner, and I thought, well, I had an idea. So I reached out to some new friends of mine called Serena Prine and the Mandevilles. They're a great band out of the Niagara area. They've just been signed to MDM Records. I had the opportunity to write with them a little while ago, and their sound, I've always said that Serena sounds like the angry love child of John Hiatt and Bonnie Raitt, and fortunately they were available. So Serena and Nick Lessig from her band, they're going to be the headliners, and then I'll be performing. And then the other two people that will be performing are John Chesman and Tim Kwiatkowski, and they're actually two of my bandmates from my new band. So if you come out, not only will you get to hear Serena, but you'll actually get to hear some of the first performances ever from, well, not the whole band, but three-fifths of my new band, Mason County Lockdown. So we're pretty excited about that. Pretty nervous about it, too, to be honest.
I'll bet. Yeah, debuting a new group. I just want to throw in there, it's nsaitoronto.com, where people can get more information about Tin Pan North and tickets and all that they need to do to attend. But Mason County Lockdown, debuting there or part of the group, what kind of sound are they going to have, Zach?
We have, how would I describe it? We have a straight-ahead country sound. You know, there's no twang in there. Definitely, you know, kind of a Keith Urban-ish, maybe a bit of Eagles, a bit of Restless Heart in there. But, you know, the coolest thing about Mason County Lockdown is John's voice, frankly. He has what I would, almost like my friend Shane, he has what I would characterize as more of a pop voice than a country voice. And what I've found over the past little while is if you take a pop voice and you put it on country songs, the end result that you get is usually pretty cool. So we've been working really, really hard on an EP of our own. I think we've got four or five songs that are being mixed right now and a couple more that should be ready for mixing pretty soon. So we're really excited about launching that band as well. So a lot of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, really exciting time. We'll have our listeners look out for Mason County Lockdown. You've had your songs recorded by about 18 or 19 other artists, songs you've either written with them or pitched to them. Do you want to throw out some of those names and how cool that is to have another artist record one of your songs?
Well, it's, and thanks for bringing that up, because that's, I mean, that's the coolest, you know. And I've had some holds with some really big people, you know, Little Big Town, Kenny Rogers, Easton Corbin, and none of those have panned out. But I don't get discouraged about that, because I look at the catalog that I built, and I realize that regardless of what level of exposure somebody's at, whether they're an independent artist or a regional act, if you're a writer and people are spending their recording budget to record something that you've written, I mean, that's the biggest honor. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter if it sells 500 copies or if it sells 5 copies. Somebody thought enough of your song out of the sea of songs that are out there to record it. So I've been fortunate to have songs recorded by people like Shane Martin, by a lady in the United States named Danielle Hensler, artist named Aubrey Bullock. I had a cut in Germany. I had a cut in Australia. So I think I'm up to probably about a dozen different artists now that have recorded my material.
Nice.
which is pretty cool. And you also get to hear somebody's interpretation of something, which may not always be how you envisioned it. And what usually happens is their end result comes out cooler than you ever thought it was going to be, right? So it's really cool to hear what somebody does with something that you've envisioned. Because oftentimes, you know, they've just got the demo to go on and they'll take it and they'll modify it to suit their style. So all in all, it's a pretty cool experience.
And one of the songs that you co-wrote and is recorded by an artist is Barbara Lynn Doran, Maybe I'll Fly, which is a great song.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Yeah, I wrote that with Barbara Lynn and with Murray Daigle, her producer. And I got my first SoCan royalty check on that song
a couple
of weeks ago. It was Barbara Lynn's last single, so that was totally cool. And that was one of those things that came together very quickly. And it's nice to have some stuff going in Canada because, frankly, most of my stuff, because of my deal that I have in the United States, most of my stuff has been in the U.S. But we're hoping to have a lot more Canadian stuff going on, a lot more Canadian opportunities, because for those people that follow me on Facebook, I indicated that I had a big announcement to reveal on your show tonight, and I'm proud to say that I've actually signed a Canadian publishing deal. So I'm announcing this on your show for the first time here.
Awesome.
So I've signed with a company called CCS Rights Management, which is run by a friend of mine named Jody Ferniehuff, who's actually the head of the Canadian Music Publishers Association. So we're now on the same roster from a publishing standpoint as MDM Records, as Chad Brownlee. And fittingly enough, I'm on the same roster now as Ralph Murphy, who's responsible for introducing me to my publisher in the United States. So it's kind of cool that, you know, Ralph and I are roster mates now. So
that's awesome. Congratulations, Zach. What a great honor and exciting things to come out of that, for sure.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that is so cool. On the subject of pitching songs, what would your ideal pitch be from a sentimental point of view, not because it's the hugest artist out there, but somebody you'd really like to hear sing one of your songs that would just make you feel good?
For me, it's probably, I mean, if I look from a sentimental perspective, I'd love to have Restless Heart do something that I wrote. And there's a lot of artists out there that don't write a lot of their own material. Like, you know, Restless Heart only ever had one single that a band member wrote. It was Dancy's Dream that Greg Jennings co-wrote. So everything else that they've ever done have been outside cuts. But if I took a look at, you know, in terms of who's, you know, topping the charts these days that I'd love to have record, it would be David Nail. I think David Nail is just awesome. You know, everything that he does, I just love it. So, you know, David Nail, Billy Currington, Jake Owen, I'd love to hear one of those guys do one of my tunes.
Nice. Yeah, I believe one of the big hits David Nail had out called Let It Rain.
He did, yeah. That was a great song. And
beautiful
really
song.
An uncommon song because, you know, we're taught, if there are rules, we're taught as writers, you know, never make the singer look bad. And, you know, the guy in that song, He looks like a real jerk, right?
So partner, yeah.
It's quite uncommon, you know. Me and my pile of things that see throughout the window standing next to me, you know. Like, so it's very uncommon to hear that kind of perspective of a cheater in a song like that. So I admire him for having the strength to do that, and it obviously paid off. It was a big hit.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because when I heard that song, I thought too, from a songwriter's perspective or a singer's perspective, you don't really hear that kind of a song, even though it was really well done, but just the angle he took on it.
Yeah, you don't really hear it. You hear a lot of those Monday nights at the Bluebird in Nashville, but you don't hear a lot of them on the radio.
Right. What about a duet partner, Zach? Have you given consideration, even if it's somebody not attainable, but an ideal duet partner, who would you like to sing with?
You know, it's funny. If you're talking females, I'm going to pull out the obscure one here, and I'm going to pull out somebody who's probably my biggest female influence that not a lot of people, I don't think, know who she is. I would love, you know, I would love to do a duet with Kim Ritchie, and that's not a name that's going to be familiar to a lot of listeners, but she's just a fantastic songwriter, a fantastic singer, and she put out an album in 1996 called Bittersweet that, I mean, I have it on CD, and if it was a record, I would have worn it out by now. I mean, it's just just an awesome record. So I'd love to do something with her. You know, I'd love to do something with, say, you know, Matresa Berg. But, you know, I'd love to sit in with the Eagles, too, you know, since we're not necessarily talking about attainable things, right?
That's right.
I might as well throw that one out there, right?
Throw the Eagles in there. It's so funny when you said Matresa Berg. I actually wrote her name down because I was going to mention it. She reminds me in the sense of Kim Ritchie, one of those songwriters who's had a lot of success, not so much as a performer, although Matresa Berg did have some songs out that did well, but mainly as a songwriter.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, if you look at the things that Matresa Berg has written, you know, like Strawberry Wine or We Danced Anyway for Dina Carter, they're awesome songs, but if you really want to hear what Matresa Berg is all about, she did an album in the 90s called Sunday Morning to Saturday Night, and there's a song on there, I think it's like the 11th song on the CD or something, and it's called The Resurrection, and people should check out that song. It's just an incredibly powerful song, and what I like about her lyrics is, you know, they are poetic. They have a lot of meaning to them, but they're still accessible and they're still relatable. You know, they're not totally obscure. You know, it's still something that, you know, qualifies as country, if you will, because it is accessible, because it's something that people can relate to. And I think they're awesome. So if you can hook me up, that'd be awesome, brother.
I'll use all the connections and pull I have to work on that. I remember
you're a good man.
Her biggest commercial hit, the video, a lot of people remember this, and I can't remember the song at the moment, but Trisha Yearwood's in at Faith Hill, and they end up at a police station.
That's Back in the Saddle.
Back in the Saddle, that's it, a real up-tempo song. And really fun video.
It is, absolutely. Yeah, Patti Loveless is in that, and Trisha Yearwood, I think Faith Hill's in it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And she, you know, I like her because she writes things that are fun, but she's not afraid to tackle serious things as well. And, you know, if you listen to that song like that I mentioned called The Resurrection, or Some People Fall, Some People Fly on her album, I think it's awesome. I still listen to it. You know, it's been probably 16 or 17 years since it came out, and I still listen to it all the time.
That's amazing. That's the power of a songwriter and a great song. Let's turn to a song of yours now, which, as you mentioned before, this closes out the EP, and there's an arc there. We heard Fallen For You. This is called Sleep With Me, and there's some great lines in it, very, very lovely and moving song. But tell us the story behind this one.
Sure. I wrote that with a good friend of mine named Chad Raymond, and this is the only song on the EP that wasn't produced by Kenny, because Chad produced this, and we basically recorded it very quickly at his house. And really where it came from, we wanted to write a song with a title that, you know, if you were looking at 15 or 20 songs on a page and all you saw were the titles, we wanted to write the one where you'd look at it and go, wow, I have to hear what that song's about. You know, right. So nothing generic like, you know, calling the song, you know, I Love You or You're the One or something. No disrespect to anybody that's written a song like that. But we wanted something that was going to jump off the page. And it just hit me all at once. We were taking a break. Chad and I, you know, we usually come up with an idea we like fairly quickly, and then we'll write 90% of it, and then we'll sit there staring at the wall for an hour and a half trying to finish it. And so I went for a walk in my publisher's office, you know, just trying to get my brain motored up again, and I came back and said, I got it. And we finished it. Now, I call that song Perfectly Imperfect because, you know, the title of the EP, as I mentioned, right, I spend all my money on the music. This song's perfectly imperfect. It doesn't have the production value that the other songs do. It's just a couple acoustic guitars and a vocal. And it was really done as a demo. And that was its intended purpose. And, you know, we thought, okay, well, we'll take this and we'll go and we'll demo it. Well, it had this authenticity to it. It had this honesty to it. And I never intended anybody to hear this. I wrote this for somebody. She knows who she is. She's listening. And, I wrote it for her, and I sent it to her. It was Easter Sunday that we did it. And, you know, from a record production standpoint, you know, there's so many things that if you were really being picky, you'd go back and fix. You know, like my timing's off on the vocal. We recorded it at Chad's farm in Nashville, and his studio has this gigantic tin roof on it, and it was just a torrential downpour. And, you know, when people get the CD, if they crank it up in parts, you can actually hear the rain beating down on this tin roof. It was,
oh man,
it was absolutely awesome. So we kept it. It just had this level of authenticity to it. The guitars sounded really cool. I used my Rain Song on it. I just signed an affiliation with Rain Song actually to use their guitars exclusively. So we used the Rain Song on it, which was appropriate because we were singing it in the rain. And it came out in a way that to me sounded really special. And, you know, I had five songs all done, ready to go, full production, full band. And I thought, you know what, this one, it deserves to be on there. So, Jen, if you're listening, I wrote
really
it for you. I hope you like it. What's that?
I find that really interesting, Zach, that because, you know, there's so much craft to songwriting and, you know, all that has to be done right. But there's that magical ingredient, you just talked about that honesty and authenticity that sometimes is just the way it's recorded. And as you said, not a perfect vocal in some cases, but you, when you capture something magical, you can't deny that, right?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I don't want to suggest that it's magical, but what it was, Dave, is it was a moment.
Right.
And, you know, it was the best that I was ever going to be able to convey the things that I felt for that particular person, you know. And
yes.
that's why we decided to keep it, and that's why I felt that it had a home on the CD. So I hope people agree. I'm sure the lovely lady that I wrote it for is probably mortified that, you know, that I'm talking about her on the radio. But, you know. It comes with the territory. That's just how it is, right?
There you go. Yeah, got to get the song out there and share it. And let's let our listeners hear this now. This is called Sleep With Me. My guest is Zach Rickson on In the Country.
You move me like an earthquake. Your layers come off like a birthday cake. Baby, help me. For heaven's sake, I'm falling. Took my time discovering you, like the very first man to land on the moon. I found my dream come true, baby, I'm all in. You look so beautiful, I bet you're graceful. When the morning breaks, wakes you from your dreams. Baby, let's make love, but maybe just this once. Let the sun come up before you leave. Sleep with me. I wanna wake up early, stay in bed. You can lay your head down on my chest. here as I confess my feeling. I might be a day away from the magic words that'll make you stay, but I can't say them just because you're leaving. You look so beautiful, I bet you're graceful when the morning breaks and wakes you from your dreams. Baby, let's make love, but maybe just this once. Let the sun come up before you leave. Sleep with me. You look so beautiful, I bet you're graceful when the morning breaks wakes you from your dreams. Baby, let's make love, but maybe just this once. Let the sun come up before you leave. Let the sun come up before you leave. Sleep.
And that is Zach Rickson. That song is called Sleep With Me, and it is from his upcoming EP, which he has entitled I Spent All My Money on the Music. ZachRickson.com is the website to check him out at. Beautiful song, and as you said, done very simply, and yet it captures a certain something, a certain mood.
Well, thanks, Dave. And yeah. I should have mentioned, by the way, that is a world premiere. Nobody has ever heard that before. So you've twice over now tonight, you've given me something that I haven't experienced before, which is hearing my own voice being broadcasted for the first time. So thank you, and it's an honor to be able to debut that song on your show tonight.
Oh, Zach, that means a lot, and thank you for doing that, and I know our listeners will appreciate it. I sure do, getting a chance to hear a song like that for the first time. You are going to be at the Black Swan Pub in Toronto on May 23rd. It's all part of Tin Pan North, which has been going on for, I think, 14. This might be the 14th annual one. NSAIToronto.com is the website to check it out. I wanted to ask you, too, about demos. When for those listeners out there who are songwriters and want to demo a song up to pitch to another artist, there's always the talk about can it be done simply with just a piano and guitar? How much production should go into a song you're going to demo and pitch?
Well, that's a really good question. And, you know, if you ask 10 people, Dave, you'll probably get 10 different answers. Let me give you my thoughts on it. It depends on who you're pitching it to, okay? And oftentimes, you're not necessarily going to get to pitch a song to an artist, but you will get to pitch a song to a publisher. And with that in mind, I think the absolute worst thing that you can do, and I've done this, okay, my first ever crushing rejection in the industry was playing a song for Tom Luteran at EMI. He's gotten 190 cuts for people, right?
Right.
And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, man, this guy's going to love this song. So I bring my guitar and I play it, and I finish it, and he goes, eh. And, you know, I got my first really nasty rejection, really heartbreaking rejection out of the way early. But I look back on it now. I brought my guitar and I played it. And to a music industry professional, that showed that I had absolutely no faith in my song to invest any money into it. And it's not about spending a ton of money. But, you know, you need to show a professional that you're serious. And when you do a demo, you get to sit back objectively and evaluate the performance of your song, which is why I never sing my own demos. I always have somebody else do them. But what I do, you know, if I come up with something with another writer and our publishers are really jacked about getting out there and pitching it, then we'll do the full band demo. But sometimes there's a song that, you know, I'm excited about from a stylistic standpoint, or because I feel that it says something to me and I feel other people might like to hear it, then what I'll do is I'll have a simple guitar vocal done and I'll put it up on my website. So there's no hard and fast rule, But what I do find for, you know, for amateur songwriters that are just starting out, if they're seeking feedback from established industry veterans, what I find is that if you've got a full band demo, a lot of times that person is going to feel bad about giving you really objective feedback because they know that you've spent so much money on it. And that can be very detrimental because you really want somebody's honest opinion. So what I always tell people, a nice guitar vocal with a tuned vocal, the vocal's got to be in tune, mixed so that the vocal is out front. If you're presenting that to a publisher and they really like your song, they're probably going to want to re-demo it anyways. But,
sure. You
know, having a good quality guitar vocal demo at a minimum shows people that you're serious about your music as a business, because we can't forget that it is a business.
That's right, and everybody believes their song is a great song, but you do have to, as you said, put together that demo, vocals up front, tuned, all that stuff, because you want to come across as a professional. And casting the vocalist is very important, too, right? If that singer or songwriter isn't going to use their own voice, whether it's not something suitable for that particular track or whatever, you want to get... what are your thoughts on that? What kind of vocalist? Do you want to get a vocalist that sounds close to who you might pitch it to?
You do and you don't, because... You know, I listened to a demo once that sounded so much like George Strait, and the song sounded so much like George Strait. And it was a really good song. It was a perfect George Strait song. The problem is if you pitch it to George Strait's people and they pass on it, everybody else that you ever play it for is going to say, wow, you should pitch that song to George Strait, right? So there is a very established roster of demo singers in Nashville, and you know, a lot of them charge a lot of money because you know, frankly, they're worth it, you know. And there's some people that do demos that they're just looking to make a buck here and there. Then there's some people that look at it as a career, and they realize what their job is and what their role is. And sometimes they'll have, you know, melodic suggestions for you. And it really, you're not looking for an artist. You're looking for an interpreter, but you're also looking for somebody that's got the skills to be able to take really a very rudimentary presentation of your song. Because often it's just, you know, me strumming and singing into a handheld recorder.
Right.
And then, you know, you're looking for somebody to be able to take this and convey a sense of emotion. I mean, my favorite demo vocalist in Nashville is a guy named Troy Johnson, and he's just awesome. But you know, he's got the price tag to match, right? So if we've got a ballad, because there's so many ballads around town, it's really hard to get a ballad cut. If we've got a ballad and you know, we want to go for the best possible presentation, then we hire Troy Johnson, and guys like that are just absolute pros. And believe it or not, it's easier to find an awesome male demo singer than it is to find an awesome female demo singer. It's very, very challenging to find a good female demo singer.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it has to do with vocal ranges, and you know, to find a female demo singer that has, you know, an awesome 3 or 4 octave range and has the ability to, you know, sing the low notes and the high notes. What I found is that most of those singers get record deals and they don't sing demos anymore.
That's so true. A lot of those demo singers, and we've come to know them, Garth Brooks, Trisha Yearwood, Gretchen Wilson, and many others started off as demo singers. And then, you know, that's of course how they get discovered. It's their way in.
Absolutely. I mean, Trisha Yearwood, she used to be able to double park her car at the studio and not get a parking ticket. She'd be done that quick. She'd come in, she'd just nail it, and she'd be done. And some of these
people,
you know, they come in and you're thinking, why are you not famous? You know, they're so talented. And you know, fortunately, if you're that good, somebody's going to hear about it. And somebody's going to discover what it is that you do. And you know, you just rhymed off 3 or 4 people out of a legion of demo singers that have made that leap into successful recording artists.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Now, we talked about the NSAI earlier. Of course, they're behind Tin Pan North, which is coming up next week. But it's the Nashville Songwriters Association International chapters, of course, in Toronto and in Canada and throughout the States. How important do you find that's been for you, Zach, in getting your music along?
Oh, NSAI has provided me with so many opportunities, Dave. And the first thing that they did for me was they gave me a home in a place where I knew nobody. You know, I knew one person in Nashville, a friend's brother. That was the only person that I knew in Nashville the first time that I went. I had just gotten right back into music. I had walked away from music for about 5 years. And, you know, to have somebody at NSAI, you know, listen to my songs and say, hey, you know, you got something here. You got something worth working on. I mean, it meant everything to me. So what they've been able to do from a mentorship standpoint, from a critique standpoint, from an opportunity standpoint, and then, you know, to tie into the local chapter up here with Sean Devlin and Dan McVeigh and their tireless work to put on Tin Pan North year after year. And you were correct, by the way, this is the 14th annual Tin Pan Festival. I don't understand, even non-country writers, you know, just because it's got Nashville in the name, don't think that it's exclusively for country songwriters. I don't understand how somebody who wants to achieve commercial success as a writer isn't a member of NSAI. So I'm a very passionate flag waver for that organization, and I'm a living, breathing example of the development that they've helped me achieve.
That's great. The website is nsaitoronto.com, not only to learn more about Tin Pan North coming up May 23rd through the 25th, but also to just find out about it in general and becoming a member and all that great stuff. As you mentioned, Sean Devlin and Dan McVeigh running one of the chapters in the Toronto area and doing a great job at it. Your EP is coming. Now, when will it be available for people to purchase?
I don't know, to be honest. Probably within a month, but what I want to do is I want to organize an event, you know, for the actual physical copies. So, you know, to me, it would be fitting for me to do that at the Moonshine. That's kind of where I got my place in Oakville. So as soon as the master's done, I am going to put it up on iTunes. But the actual physical release, I'm looking at doing an event. What I've got to try and weigh is, you know, is the availability of venues and also whether or not anybody's going to come out in the summer, you know, whether they're just out of town or having fun with their families or something. So it could be as early as next month. It could be as late as September. I apologize for not being able to narrow it down more than that, but I will have things up digitally as soon as they're ready.
Perfect. And people can follow the progress and updates at zachrickson.com, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, the easiest thing to do is join my mailing list. Just provide me with your email address on my website, zachrickson.com, and you'll be kept up to date about all of the news that I can't believe that people actually want to hear about me. So.
Awesome. Well, we've shared a lot of it here. So many exciting things going on. The EP, Tin Pan North, the Mason County Lockdown, the new group that you're with, and a bunch of other stuff going on. Thanks so much for being on the show again, Zach. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks very, very much for having me tonight, Dave. You're always a fantastic interviewer, very well prepared, and it's always an enjoyable experience to be on your show. I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Definitely. We will do this again. Thanks so much. My guest has been Ontario singer-songwriter Zach Rickson. I'm Dave Woods. To hear more country interviews, be sure to head to inthecountryinterviews.com.